right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio. We're back in Studio D. We were working out of Studio A for a few months, and now we're back in Studio D, our old home. coming up, by the way, after 1 o'clock, our good buddy Jim Ryan is going to join us, music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him at Radio Jim Ryan. Lots of really fun stuff that he's been writing about. And we'll also play a round of Rock of Ages, which is a music trivia game that we play every time Jim is here. So that's coming up. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk about Little Richard, obviously. And we got Classic Carson from the archives there. We're going to play Don Rickles and Glenn Campbell, which sounds like an interesting combination right there. Every Monday morning, we review the new movies, although we haven't been doing a lot of that lately because, you know, just new movies have not been coming out. We've got some stuff that's being streamed, which you can watch at home. And so we'll talk about that, but it's Steve Procopi and Eric Childress join me every Monday morning. And let's say hello to these guys. Eric, how you doing?
Hello. Okay.
All right. And Steve.
Hello.
All right. How you guys been doing?
Been doing. Sort of relegating myself to the fact that probably not going to be going out to enjoy anything of consequence for some time at this point. It seems like we're in for a long haul here.
Yeah.
And you know, the drive-in might be our best respite for, you know, getting out to see movies. I mean, at this point, that might be the only place that I might even venture out to see, you know, Tenant, if, you know, that still opens in July. So, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Steve, how are you handling it?
Good. Yeah. I mean, honestly, in all the years we've been doing Flashback Weekend, I've never been to the Midway Drive-In, which is Mike and Mia's drive-in. And I got a note from Mia like, "You got to come." I'm like, "This is the thing that's going to get me there." So, and they open up in a couple weeks. So, I'll go. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't know where Dixon is, but I'll go.
It's a bit of a haul, Steve.
I'm sure. I could use the drive, honestly.
Yeah, it's out there, but you got to support Mike and Mia and you know, the Midway drive-ins and all the drive-ins that are out there. I love that the McHenry did so well that there were just like so many people at the McHenry, including our good friend Colin.
Yeah.
He went on Saturday, I believe.
He got shut out on Friday.
He did,
went, but he got shut out.
Yeah, because he couldn't get
he
in.
Made it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, he made it in Saturday.
Incredible.
And there's some talk that the Cascade might actually be reopening.
Oh, wow.
I read some things about that in the last week, too.
Wow. That's great. I also, you know, and I love some of the movies that they're showing. Like next week, it's Billy Madison and Tommy Boy.
Yeah,
And the McHenry's going to be sold out. I mean, there's going to be lines around the block for that for those two movies.
Yeah.
You know, these are perfect movies to see at the drive-in. You know, so well, there it is, man. All right, but we do have some new releases that have been streamed, right?
There were probably about 10 new movies put out this week, so and we're only going to touch on a fraction of them. But there were so many. Yeah.
All right. Well, first of all, Steve, tell me about the Natalie Wood. Is this a documentary, right?
Yeah, this is premiered on HBO. I believe it was Tuesday.
Okay.
Tuesday.
Yeah, and so it's you know, not unlike Marilyn Monroe or Sharon Tate, the career of Natalie Wood has sort of been unfortunately reduced to the circumstances surrounding her death when she was only 43. But perhaps more than any other actress of her generation, or even prior, Wood's standing in Hollywood as both a performer and sort of this power broker for women's equality in the film industry is really forgotten, both because of her great beauty and the tragedy of her untimely death. So this film, which is directed by Laurent Bozarou, who did a great documentary series that's on Netflix called Five Came Back, and one of Wood's daughters, Natasha Gregson-Wagner, who's also an actress, kind of explore the life and career of this very talented and influential performer. The doc has lots of film clips and archival interviews with Wood and recent interviews with family members and close friends. And it really just walks us through her career and her life. And it sort of details her successful acting career that she was a child actress. And then it goes through some of her personal triumphs and tragedies. She had a lot of marriages and love affairs, largely with very famous men. She married Robert Wagner twice, and he's in this film, interviewed by Natasha, and really goes into a lot of detail about their relationship, as well as the night that Natalie Wood died and she fell out of this boat and drowned. And the film doesn't shy away from these weird conspiracy theories about her death either. They kind of go into it, and there's a lot of great interviews with people like Mia Farrow and George Hamilton and Robert Redford, who I didn't realize Natalie Wood discovered him on the stages of New York, and then George Segal and Elliot Gould and Richard Benjamin. And like I said, it sort of goes through all the ups and downs of her career and right up to Brainstorm, which was sort of poised to be the beginning of this big comeback for her. And what you really start to do, you know, inevitably you start to sort of look for the places where maybe someone doesn't look so good. And honestly, I mean, I realize this is made by her, partially by her family, but you by the end of this, you're just like, wow, she honestly looked like a genuinely lovely person and a very generous person. And so this is a very loving and honest tribute to a talented actor and what apparently it turns out to be a lovely human being too.
Yeah. All right, it's on HBO then.
HBO and HBO Go, yeah.
Okay, I will definitely watch that. Guys, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric and Steve are here, and we're going to come back and talk more about movies and documentaries that you can stream from the comfort of your own home.
I was a little too tall, could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high. Way up firm and high. I'd pass the cornfields with a whiskey.
Right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here until 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on, and after 1, Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald in Chicago Now, is going to join us. Always a lot of fun when Jim is here. Right now, Eric Childress and Steve Procopi are here, and we're talking about the new movie releases that are being streamed right now. And then we're going to talk about documentaries that you can watch while we're all stuck inside. Here is Eric. And
hello.
Here is Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
All right. Eric, tell us about Driveways.
Okay. Oh, this is a film that is getting a lot of attention right now because it co-stars Brian Dennehy, who we just recently passed away just a few weeks ago. But the star of the movie is Hong Chau, who's in Downsizing and most recently on HBO's Watchmen. She plays a single mother with a young child who goes back to her sister's house. Her sister has just passed away. In the effort to possibly sell the house, she has to take care of it and clean it, discovers that her sister was a hoarder, so it's a lot of work. The kid is kind of socially awkward. He's not very good in any sort of crowds, including one or two people. But he develops a sort of a little kinship with Brian Dennehy's character, who lives next door, who's veteran, he is a pretty nice guy that just goes about his day playing bingo at the VFW, forms a nice little friendship, with this kid. And, that's pretty much the extent of the movie. And it's sort of the atypical sort of just nice movie that never really sort of gets beyond, at least for me, that just the sort of this general tone that it just never finds sort of a greater conflict or something bigger that's going on in the story, and it kept reminding me of movies that I thought kind of did this material better. A film a few years ago with Bill Murray called Saint Vincent has a very similar structure. our dynamic between the characters. This one's sort of a nicer, less grumpy version of that story. And there's also a movie at Sundance this year called Minari with Steven Yeun about a family, Korean family that moves to America in the early 1980s and tries to develop this life. And I thought, you know, this movie is just kind of, you know, kid finds special friend next door, and he's kind of nice, and they give Brian Dennehy a really nice monologue at the very end of the movie, and when I say very end, I mean literally the movie just kind of ends right after that, and I was kind of left going, okay. So it's not a bad film. It's a fine film. It's been getting, again, a lot of press right now because of Dennehy's passing. I always love seeing Dennehy in a nice guy role, and he's really terrific here. I just wish that there was a little bit more meat on the bone of this movie.
All right. Steve, what did you think?
I think this is a beautiful movie and a really fitting tribute to the range of Brian Dennehy. When we think of him, we usually think of him as being like, he's a great utilitarian player for sure, but he rarely got to do something this sort of gentle and moving, and he was sort of larger than life, but I don't remember a time when I've seen him really play this fragile and humble and full of regret about parts of his life. But I mean, I think some people might even cry at that monologue. That monologue might be the meat of this film. And yeah, I did think of St. Francis when, or no, what's it called?
Vincent.
Yeah, when I saw this, but that movie was like out of its way kind of quirky. And this movie is sort of stripping away all the quirkiness and just sort of settling in. And this film avoids a lot of cliches. And I mean, this is not a movie about like this little kid melting this old man's heart. The old man's pretty nice to begin with. So they're not really, the whole point is there's not really any villains here. And they're trying to say that, like, there are places in this country where there aren't villains. I know it's hard to remember that sometimes, but sometimes the neighbors are actually pretty neighborly. Even the sort of bullying kids next door are sort of put in their place pretty quickly.
The neighbor's a little racist, adjacent.
Oh, no, it is a little, and then it's also a little not. Like, it's a weird thing. But I'm just saying that, like, she's not outwardly, she seems very, like, the neighbor who's played by Christine Ebersole is she thinks she means well, let's put it that way. I think that's how we politely put it. But anyway, I was genuinely moved by this. And the director is a guy named Andrew Ahn. This is his second film. The first one was one I saw at the, I think it was the Asian American Film Festival at the Siskel a few years ago called Spa Night. And this, I think this is a much better film. And like I said, a really nice tribute to Dennehy, who I think still has a few films in the can right now for whenever, but this film actually premiered at Tribeca last year, so this is a little bit older, but I'm really glad we're in an environment where something like this can actually get some attention. I think Michael Phillips gave it 4 stars the other day, so yeah, I like it a lot.
It's available on Prime Video. Mm-hmm. if you want to check it out, that's called Driveways. I love me some Brian Dennehy, man. All right, Steve, what is Spaceship Earth?
Spaceship Earth, as a kid growing up sort of obsessed with space travel and even the faintest possibility of humans living on the moon or Mars or wherever, I kind of have a vague recollection of this 2-year quarantine experiment that began in 1991 known as Biosphere 2. And it was named that because the Earth was considered Biosphere 1. I don't know. It's hippie stuff. Who knows? But in theory, this sort of live-in bio lab was meant to investigate the probability that humans could coexist in like these closed quarters while also doing dozens of experiments involving plant life and animal life. And the habitat had like a coral reef in one place and a desert environment and a rainforest and fields where they could grow crop and an array of animals to sort of simulate an Earth-like ecosystem with like a pinch of Noah's Ark thrown in. And of course, the minute the door shut, the trouble began. And this documentary by a guy named Matt Wolf combines some archival footage and home movies from inside Biosphere 2 and new interviews with most of the people who went in, because they're mostly still alive, and a lot of them are actually still living together on like a farm or something. So, but it kind of goes into the origins of the idea, which go back to the late 1960s, and this leader that sort of emerges named John Allen, who kind of seems to have a clear idea of the direction the group should go in, and they get this funding from this oil tycoon named Ed Bass, and the ecosystem is sort of a reaction to the Earth's environment going down the toilet, and it's sort of the next logical step in the evolution of space travel. So there's a lot of hoopla when they first go in, and almost as soon as they go in, the news, the media starts going looking for holes in the ecosystem, as it were, and it turns out they're being very closed off and not very transparent, and they're actually cheating a little bit. They're pumping in oxygen when they're not supposed to be, and they're bringing in supplies secretly, and so it kind of gets into that, and weirdly enough, once the experiment's over, they all kind of get kicked out of the project, and Steve Bannon is brought in to take over. So, yes, that's Steve Bannon. Mm. So that's like a bizarre twist. You know, I'm assuming you guys have some recollection of this thing, maybe. But it's like they had matching uniforms, and it's sort of vaguely science fiction-y, and Biodome 2 was kind of easy to laugh at when things start to fall apart, but this film is the story about those who weren't laughing and sort of making it a little bit heartbreaking as well as entertaining. So it's, yeah, that's a modest recommendation for me.
Okay. Does Pauly Shore and Stephen Baldwin show
there
up?
You know,
I can't believe that doesn't make its way into this, to be honest. I was sort of waiting for it. But yeah, that was a little bit later.
Okay. All right. Steve, tell us about, what is this, 1BR?
One bedroom. This is a sort of a psychological horror thing. After leaving behind a painful past to follow her dream, this woman named Sarah, who's played by a really terrific actress named Nicole Bryden Bloom, she gets this sort of perfect Hollywood apartment, and she's hoping to become a costume designer. But something isn't quite right, and she's unable to sleep, and she's sort of tormented by these strange noises that she hears behind the walls, and she gets threatening notes about her cat that she sneaks into a no-pet building, and her new life sort of starts to unravel, and the neighbors seem very friendly, except when they seem weird, and I don't want to give away anything, but she kind of, when she starts to find out what the waking nightmare is going to become in her life, she kind of has to find the strength to hold on to her sanity and not get brainwashed or be trapped in this sort of existential hell. This is a really interesting film from David Marmer, who investigates sort of the pluses and minuses of a tight-knit community like an apartment complex. There are certainly times when it's truly unsettling, but the performances are really strong here, and it's something of a companion piece to The Invitation. You will definitely see parallels, although it's a very different story and certainly a very different outcome. But I think as old school Polanski psychological thriller, it really works.
Okay, that's called One Bedroom.
And you can get that through the Music Box Theater's website, the virtual theater thing.
Oh, okay. So check out musicbox.com. All right. Very, very cool. Okay. Let's do this. We'll break, and we come back. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about documentaries because everybody is stuck inside, and we want to give we've been given different genres every week of suggestions for people to watch, and we'll jump into the world of documentaries. So, guys, hang on. Eric and Steve are here, and we'll tell you all about some great documentaries that you can stream and watch at home. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're talking with Steve Procopi and Eric Childress. And we try and pick a different genre since we're all stuck inside. There's a lot of stuff that you can watch on your TV. And basically, we're going to be telling you about some great documentaries that you can check out. And here is Eric. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Steve. All right.
Hello.
Okay, let's start. Eric, go ahead and we'll start with you on Netflix, Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened.
Yeah, this is the documentary that was causing quite a stir about a year ago, I think. People might remember this Fyre Festival, this big music festival that these guys wanted to put on, and they organized this enormous event. They were going to fly people to this island, and it was going to be the next new thing, and it turned out to be just the biggest disaster ever. The combination of just hubris and greed, and just knowing a little bit about putting on an event, maybe not quite something as extravagant as that, but seeing how the people who were going to attend just got screwed out of this whole thing, it's infuriating. But if you only think you know the story from the news, this documentary shows you just how insane the behind the scenes story really was.
Okay, I remember this whole thing. And that's available on Netflix.
Yes.
Also on Netflix is Steve American Factory.
It won the Oscar
yeah.
for best documentary this year. It's a tremendous and sort of hard to watch look at an American factory that makes glass, and how a Chinese company comes in and takes it over and try to mix the two labor forces, and it just doesn't happen. And it's a weird look at the American dream and how, even these Chinese workers kind of love the idea of being able to come to America, but when they're put side by side with American workers, it's tough. It doesn't quite work out for the company or the workers. This played at Sundance last year and got picked up by Netflix, and this is the first film that President and First Lady Obama are producers on it to some degree, and their distribution company or production company kind of bought it and their name's on it. It's a fantastic movie. Not quite the movie you think it's going to be when you kind of put Chinese up against American work ethics, or American versus any other country's work ethics, to be honest. And of course, they all get screwed by automation. So anyway, but it's an awesome movie. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Eric, also on Netflix, Amy.
Yeah, documentary about the tragic rise and very quick fall of Amy Winehouse. And I was a fan of the her voice. I mean, it was a pretty incredible, unique talent. But this documentary, beyond the tragic tale of drugs and addiction that she went through, this is a documentary that really gave me a real appreciation for her music. And that's what I think a great music documentary, even though this is biography as well, a great music documentary will give you a real appreciation for the music, and I'm always looking out for documentaries such as that. I really adore this movie.
Yeah, me too. It's great. It's just great. Okay, and another music documentary from Netflix, 20 Feet from Stardom.
Also an Oscar winner from 2014. This is from director Morgan Neville, who did Won't You Be My Neighbor more recently. And this is about backups, background singers. And honestly, I mean, there's so many great voices and people, and often they're very unseen or uncredited, and this film kind of just pushes them to the front. And honestly, the whole film is worth it just for the whole sequence about the woman who sings the female voice on the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter, and how she was like 8 months pregnant or something when she did it. It's just such a fantastic sequence. And just like Neville's focused on human beings behind the voices, that's kind of his talent, and it makes it really special.
Okay. All right. So it's a terrific movie, too. I mean, really, I think it's terrific. Okay. Eric, documentary now?
Yeah. I would be remiss, since we're talking about documentaries, not to bring up the series that was on IFC, or is still on IFC, I guess, that Bill Hader and Fred Armisen and Seth Meyers produced. That's basically a parody of various documentaries that, a lot of the classic ones. I mean, it opens with a parody of Grey Gardens, for God's sake. This is still one of my favorite episodes of that entire series. And it just, the first season is pretty much Hader and Armisen, you know, playing most of these characters. They sort of gave way to a lot of other different guest stars for the second season. But they do one on Wild Wild Country, which is also the documentary series on Netflix that has Michael Keaton as the FBI agent and Owen Wilson as the guru that everyone follows. That is just hysterically funny. I love this show.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Okay, Five came back.
Yeah, this I mentioned this earlier. This is the same director as the Natalie Wood documentary. This was a three-episode documentary series, an adaptation of the book by Mark Harris about these five filmmakers that were working before World War II, and they were each sort of given different assignments. They all went to war, were each sort of given different assignments during war. John Ford, William Wyler, John Huston, Frank Capra, and George Stevens. And each of the episodes is sort of has these newer directors like Spielberg and Guillermo del Toro talking about how influential these films were and what these men went through during the war. And some of them, like John Huston and John Ford, were just in the middle of everything, like just completely. So like for World War II buffs, it's an absolutely must see, but it's also really masterfully structured and just such insight, and there's footage I've just never seen of some of this stuff. And I remember when it came out, the Netflix also put out a lot, made available a lot of the films these filmmakers made during the war. So it's a terrific series, though.
Okay, Five came back. All right, Eric, Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever made.
Yeah, this is a film that actually played our Chicago Critics Film Festival some years ago. The people may have heard of the story of these kids who were such fans of Raiders of the Lost Ark that they decided to recreate the film using just their own props and themselves as all the actors and whatnot, and created just scene by scene, shot by shot, the entire movie of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it became a bit of a sensation. It was played, actually Steve can actually tell you a story about it being played at a little festival that he attended. But this movie takes you on this journey of the kids then as adults, and the rocky history in their past up to adulthood, and then all trying to get themselves together to film the one last scene that they need to complete their shot-by-shot masterpiece, which of course is the big plane sequence from Raiders of the Lost Ark. This documentary is so much fun, and it's amazing what these guys did.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie. It really is terrific. We're talking with Steve and Eric. Everybody's stuck at home, so we're giving you some documentary options to watch while you're at home. All right, how about The Unknown Known, also on Netflix?
This was Errol Morris's film about Donald Rumsfeld, and I realize that you don't want to give him more attention than he already thinks he deserves, but to be honest, the guy has an incredible life story, and Errol Morris does, to his credit, get to ask some of the tough questions of him about different wars he was a part of and different administrations he was a part of, and there are just times where he, especially recounting the Iraq War, that are just downright chilling. And as far as political documentaries go, this is a must-watch thing, but you also kind of get a feel for what a career politician is capable of, good or evil.
Yeah.
It's an amazing movie, and I just love Errol Morris, and I think it might be the last like truly great film that he made.
Yeah, Errol Morris, is when you see his name, it's good. That's pretty much it. All right, Eric, Screwball.
Yeah, and we're missing baseball right now, but this is the story of the guy that was in charge of, I believe it was the Balco, I believe was the name of the company that was essentially supplying performance-enhancing drugs to players in the major league. Specifically, this movie documents, it's all a lot about this guy, but it details in quite some detail about his dealings with Alex Rodriguez. And so if you see Alex Rodriguez whenever we see him again doing playoff announcing, watch this documentary to get a little more perspective on exactly what this guy was involved with when he was belting homers left and right.
Okay. All right.
Isn't that also the movie that with the reenactments they have children doing the reenactments?
Yeah.
no reason.
Okay. All right. Okay. Next one is Euro Dreams of Sushi.
Oh, I think it's the best food documentary ever made. Even if you don't like sushi, you'll be salivating over this place. This place in Japan that's like a $500 a plate restaurant, kind of hidden away in Japan. The chef's name is Hiro Ono, who is sort of in the process of turning over the business, or at least one of his restaurants, over to his son, and it's just captivating and beautiful, and you realize there's a philosophy behind sushi making, and there's such detail, or it's such a detail-oriented profession, right down to the kind of rice you buy and where you get it from and how long you cook it for and how you cook it. It's unbelievable. And so he kind of opens up the door to his place and his secrets, and it's a fascinating look at just Japanese culture in general. Especially right now, it just feels good to like see a restaurant that's like full. So anyway, it's a really fitting documentary, even if you know it'll leave you physically hungry by the end of it.
Oh, I was drooling during this movie. So all right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll have more documentaries to throw at you, and that you can watch while you're stuck at home with Eric and Steve coming back after this. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. It is a Monday morning, so my dad's going to call in and tell a joke later on. And we're going to be talking with Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes.com, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. Always a lot of fun when Jim is here. And we'll play a round of Rock of Ages, which is a fun music trivia game. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Talking with Eric Childress and Steve Procopi about documentaries that we are suggesting that you can check out. Here's Eric.
Hello.
And Steve.
Hello.
Okay. Eric, we'll move on to Hulu. Love, Gilda.
Yeah, a documentary about the career of Gilda Radner, who we lost, a lot of greats way too early. You know, we talked about Natalie Wood earlier. And this one, you know, this documentary about the sort of the everlasting impact of Gilda Radner and, you know, what she went through and the legacy that she left, and seeing people, contemporaries of hers now, reading bits from her, diary and things that she's written over the years. It's a real special look back at an incredibly talented woman.
Yeah, it's a wonderful movie. It is a wonderful movie. Next one, Steve, Free Solo.
Did either of you guys ever get around to seeing this one?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man, this is, you know, I'm not afraid of heights, but I'm afraid of falling. And this movie is all about that. And I do prefer some of my adventures to be lived vicariously through someone. In this case, it's a guy named Alex Harnold, who is attempting his first ever, be the first person ever to climb El Capitan in Yosemite. It's 3,200 feet and without any ropes. And it's an incredibly dangerous feat, and the filmmaking by Jimmy Chin and his wife are just unbelievable, who are also both climbers. But you don't just, it's not just a document of the climb and all the 2 years of preparation that go into it. It really does get into why someone like this guy, who's a little bit of a robot, I'll admit, would risk his life to do something like this. And he has a fiance that we very much feel for in this movie. And, it's a fantastic film, but it will, and I, you know, played at the Music Box, so you see that, those perilous heights, in big, very big, and it made my stomach just turn several times over.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be able to. I would freak out. I would totally freak out, even from the comfort of my own home.
Yeah.
So, all right, real quick, here's Ike. Ike, go ahead.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right, what's up?
Yeah, I have a good suggestion for a documentary. It's a perfect documentary to watch, especially people who are in quarantine, to help them stay in shape and everything. This one really opened my eyes. Supersize Me?
Supersize Me, yeah. The Morgan Spurlock documentary. That's right.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that opened my eyes, man.
Okay. All right, Ike. Take care.
No problem.
Yeah, not a fan of that movie. the thing about that is that, you know, it's this expose about you know, this guy Morgan Spurlock who would eat every meal at McDonald's, and whenever they asked you to supersize it, he would supersize it, and oddly enough, he got sick. But the weird thing is that he didn't say this beforehand. He was a vegan before he did this stunt. So yeah, obviously it's going to make you sick, but if you're a vegan, it's going to be even worse. So, all right. Eric, active measures.
Yeah, there are a lot of crackpot partisan documentaries that you can find on both sides of the aisle. But this one that came out last year, actually, really sort of peels back the Iron Curtain, if you will, of the legacy that Donald Trump has had with Russia over the years. This is a very thoroughly researched, very fact-based thing that, you know, takes you back to traces of, you know, Trump's connection with Russians over the years, particularly the Russian mafia, and it's a pretty eye-opening documentary, and you know, not that we need anything to make us more angry at the way things have gone the last 3 years, but this one, you know, people should take a look at, especially considering how Robert Mueller pretty much failed us. So,
all right, on Hulu, Jane.
Yeah, this is a really great documentary of the early years of Jane Goodall, and you know, there have been plenty of documentaries about her work with various chimpanzees and gorillas, but this is about her first time doing this, and just the mistakes she made and the things she did right, and how it kind of inspired the rest of her career. And she worked with this cameraman who ended up being her husband, and it's a really interesting look at her today, and certainly in her, like, just early 20s. And I think it's a must watch for anyone who's sort of been fascinated by her story. And she also makes a very funny appearance in Spaceship Earth, actually, at the very end.
When they
emerge, she's there and to sort of greet them, and it's like, oh wow, okay.
All right.
So yeah.
Okay. Let's do this a little quicker.
Yeah.
Eric, I'll give you a few titles here. You got Apollo 11.
Oh yeah, wonderful. It's a wonderful film.
Best of Enemies.
Yeah, Buckley versus Adele.
Mm-hmm. And then Amazing Grace.
Two words: Aretha Franklin.
Yep. for you, Steve, you got the first Monday in May.
I put this on here because I think it's a fascinating document of something that would have happened this past Monday, like a week ago, the Met Gala, and the process that goes into the year-long process that goes into putting that together. And it just got canceled. I mean, it got canceled this year. So
yeah,
for people who actually pay attention to that, and I am not one of them, but this is a fascinating document.
All right. Far From the Tree?
It's a strange little documentary about kids that do not end up like their parents, that are very different than their parents. They could just be, you know, proteges, or they could be serial killers. And it kind of looks at is there any similarity between those two. It's based on a very popular book, I really love this documentary.
Okay. Iris.
It's about, I'm trying to remember her last name now. Iris is she's a really famous sort of stylist and just a style maker. She's a very old lady and very popular. And I'm losing her. I forgot her last name now. But anyway, it's there's very few. Apfel, that's her name. And she was she's 98 right now, still alive, living in New York. And she basically became famous because of her eccentric style and taste. And she ended up sort of being the sort of fashion statement for the stars. So yeah.
Okay. All right. And then on Amazon Prime, my God, this movie, Dear Zachary.
yeah. often cite this as my favorite documentary of all time, Kurt Kenny's document to try to give this child of his best friend a portrait of his father whose life was taken from him. And it's an amazing documentary about how life can basically almost sabotage the beauty that he was trying to put into this documentary. It's one of the most devastating things, but also one of the most beautiful films you'll ever see as well.
Yeah, you be prepared, though, because this movie is devastating. Bill Cunningham, New York.
Yeah, he just died recently. He was the New York Times sort of fashion photographer that put together this back page. It was almost like an anthropological look at what people on the streets of New York, not like runway, but like what actual people would wear and their fashion similarities. And he was very influential. And there was another documentary about him that we just talked about a couple months ago. So yeah, he's a terrific subject and very just an adorable human being.
Eric, Private Violence.
Yeah, this is originally an HBO documentary about different cases, caseworkers who work on domestic violence cases, and how some are successful and how many of them are not. Again, a very important documentary, one that people should take a look at.
Okay, let's see, Gimme Danger.
I mean, it's Jim Jarmusch doing a documentary about Iggy Pop and the Stooges. I don't think I have to say anything. And Iggy Pop's like shirtless for his whole new interview and smoking. So yeah,
okay. There you
it's amazing.
Nuts.
Yeah, the story of this this medical doctor in the 1920s and 30s who had the idea that you could implant goat testicles into the scrotums of human males to cure impotence. And it's done through animation. It's an incredible, hilarious story.
Okay.
From the director of Hail Satan, by the way.
That's right. Yeah. Gleason?
Fantastic, just absolutely tear-jerking documentary about NFL safety Steve Gleason, who ended up getting ALS during his career, and just about his wife, and she gets pregnant right as he becomes basically completely disabled. It is an unbelievable story about this guy, his career as in football, and then as an activist for just basically wheelchair-bound people in general. Mm-hmm. So, just so moving.
Okay. Shut Up, Little Man.
Yeah, this is a story of these two guys that move into this apartment and hear that their neighbors are just always yelling at one another. One of them always saying "Shut up, little man" to the other one. They began taping these conversations and distributing them to their friends. This film is sort of the spiritual sequel to Winnebago Man in a way, and how sort of a weird true life thing. People who do not try to be celebrities end up becoming them because of people's fascination with their ridiculousness.
Yeah. Well, I love that movie. I Am Big Bird.
I mean, we just lost Carol Spinney recently, the original Big Bird. And this is a guy who not only was a fantastic actor and puppeteer, but he knew the importance of Big Bird to just millions of kids over many generations, and just leaned into it and was so kind and so amazing. And you just become a kid again watching him do his thing and sort of getting a peek behind the curtain the feathered curtain.
It's a lovely movie. And then best worst movie, Eric.
There's a film about the phenomenon around the cult sensation that is Troll 2, considered one of the worst movies of all time. It interviews members of the cast and the cult phenomenon that's grown out of it. But also, it's a great documentary reminder that bad movies happen organically. You can't just make a bad movie for the sake of doing it and expect it to be a thing. It just has to happen out of the sheer passion of the filmmaker.
Right.
It's the reason The Room is what it is.
Okay. And then really quickly, Paradise Lost trilogy, that goes without saying. Those movies.
Yeah, Joe Berlinger and Bruce Sinofsky in the West Memphis 3, and this horrible murder that these kids got pinned on them, and just it just took so long to get them out and free, and it crushes you and inspires you all at once.
It's a great movie. Okay, guys, stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week. Okay,
thanks.
Sounds good.
All right, there you go. There's Eric and Steve. They'll be back again next week.